Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Small claims court, finding a lawyer, your legal bill of rights, making the legal system more accessible to consumers. Well, we're going to discuss all this and more. My guest is Tom Gordon. He's the executive director for Consumers for a Responsive Legal System, and their website is responsivelaw.org. Tom, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thanks for having me, Shirley.
Now, your organization does some great things. You're out there looking out for consumers, and as I said, you're trying to make the legal system more accessible. And that goes from everything to small claims court to assistance, legal assistance, outside of having to go to a lawyer. Am I right?
That's right.
Yeah. You cover quite a large spectrum of interest for consumers. So let's talk about it. First off, you've just done a new website. Congratulations. It's
Thank
very
you.
Informative. Give our listeners a little bit of an overview of what they can find on that website, because you've got some great links to, you've got some great forms, legal forms and whatnot, but you tell us.
Absolutely. Well, there's several things we do to try to help consumers through our website. The first thing we do is to introduce people to some of the issues that are at the heart of keeping consumers from getting the legal help they need. Now, a lot of people think, well, I don't like lawyers. Lawyers are the problem. Lawyers aren't the problem, at least not individual lawyers treating people poorly. The problem with access to the legal system is a systemic one where the legal profession has often blocked off avenues to help that should be available to people. So we talk about different options that people should have available to them, but which the profession prevents them from having. So making the courts more accessible, making them more user-friendly, using non-lawyers to help you with your legal problems, or having better self-help available to people using the legal system. These are all issues that consumers should be aware of when they're fighting for their rights to get better legal help.
Yes, and there's some interesting things that are going on right now as well, which we will get into in a minute. But you are a lawyer, aren't you?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, I thought you were. So we're not talking bad about lawyers. We're just saying, let's help consumers sometimes be able to do something so that they don't have to go to a lawyer. And towards that end, you were telling me before we started the program that there are some interesting things going on in California and the state of Washington.
That's correct. Right now, Washington State is in the process of developing rules to allow what they call limited licensed legal technicians, LLLTs for short, because the first thing's a mouthful. These LLLTs would be people usually who have trained as paralegals, but not necessarily, who are able to help people with their legal problems. People who are not lawyers have some degree of training, though, and are tested and licensed by the state to help people with lower level legal problems, simpler legal problems. It's analogous to what happens in medicine, where you can have a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant work with you directly to help you with your health problems. This would be the equivalent in the legal profession of somebody who would presumably cost less, be easier to access, and would be able to help you with simpler legal problems.
Now, the difference between this degree, this licensing, and a paralegal is that what? A paralegal works for a lawyer?
Right. A paralegal is somebody who works for a lawyer, directly for a lawyer. LLLTs might be someone who had been trained as a paralegal, but they would be working independently. So they would be directly providing services to a consumer. It would be in many ways, though, a lot of the same thing that these people would do if they were working for a lawyer, only they're not charging consumers lawyer rates. They're charging them a lower rate because they're doing the work directly to the consumer.
So this might mean filling out simple forms, legal forms, maybe a no contest divorce, a living will. Would that be some of the things that you might seek help for?
Exactly. It could include help with filling out forms. It could also include directing people as to which court they need to go to, or telling them where to go for resources. It can include explaining court procedure or how to apply for a certain form, how to get a certain type of help. So what they're looking at right now is doing this in family law in Washington State, and then they're going to roll out other areas of law as well. But for now, family law is an area where this is really the most needed.
And this will be special licensing.
This would be special licensing through the state, which would require an educational component and a practical component, so that somebody has to have a certain amount of experience working in this area and also has to have a certain amount of formal training.
And then the same kind of thing is starting to take place in California, I believe you told me?
That's right. The State Bar of California has recognized that, even as the Bar of California, they realize that lawyers are not the solution to all the problems. There's a huge lack of access to law, and lawyers now are realizing that they're not the only way to solve this problem. They're certainly part of the solution, but what the State Bar of California has realized is that they too need to explore options like limited licensed legal technicians.
Well, so, that's to make it available to consumers so that we don't have to pay $300 or $400 an hour or more.
Exactly. If you look at what it would cost, there's no, obviously this profession hasn't arrived yet, but there's no reason to expect that it wouldn't cost a significant amount less than an attorney costs.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't have, you have a lesser degree, but that doesn't mean there's lesser knowledge in certain areas which they're going to be trained for and licensed.
Exactly.
So there is going to be oversight, which is the important thing here.
Right.
Right. Okay. Is any of that happening on the East Coast? Are we seeing this kind of progressive thinking happening here?
No, we haven't seen anything on the East Coast along these lines yet. A lot of these ideas do tend to start out on the West Coast and move east. That tends to be the trend. We have seen one interesting bill in New York State would allow non-lawyers to assist people free of charge in the state's housing court, which is a helpful idea and something that is fairly progressive. We don't know if that bill is going to make it through the legislature this year, but just that it's being proposed is really helpful.
Something that for consumers. But you all have also been involved in small claims courts. Mm-hmm. And I know, have you ever done a study on small claims courts and their limitations?
I have at another organization. Okay. So in the past, I've looked at research small claims courts and how effective they can be. There are some other great studies out there about how they work. But basically, small claims courts are designed to be the people's court. They're designed to help individuals who are in need of resolving a legal problem without a lawyer. They either can't afford a lawyer or it's not cost effective for this smaller claim that they're bringing.
And consequently, they end up not doing it, perhaps.
Right. What happens is, though, unfortunately, small claims courts are designed to be simpler than regular lawyer courts, to use an informal term. But they're not quite simple enough for the average person. They're designed for someone with maybe a great deal of education or a very minimal amount of legal education. And so people need to have these small claims courts made even simpler to help them through it. And one of the things we do on our website is we point out some of the resources available to people that can help them through a small claims proceeding.
Oh, that's great. So you've got information there that will be useful so that I shouldn't be intimidated by going to small claims court.
Absolutely. It's like the other unfortunate thing is that a lot of folks have look at small claims court and they think, oh, it's like those TV judge shows. Unfortunately, on most of the TV judge shows, the judge doesn't do what they're supposed to do. They're doing things for television and for entertainment value. They're not looking at the facts and applying the law to them. And that's all that happens. The judge will generally not yell at you in small claims court. They are trying to do their job and resolve a dispute between two people.
Right. And be fair. And yes, and that's right. And resolve the dispute without you having to go through court lawyers. Now, I know one of the big complaints about small claims courts is that the limits on which you can sue for are so small that they really have not been adjusted for inflation over the years. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the states have made some progress, but not a whole big lot.
No, that's right. In most states, the most you can sue for in small claims court is $5,000. There are a few states that have gone up to $10,000 or $15,000 or even $25,000 limit, and somewhere around $20,000 or $25,000 is really an amount that makes more sense. These are amounts that people could have disputes over in everyday life. They're not large corporate disputes. It might be an amount of money you have at stake if you have a dispute with a home contractor.
Yes, amen. And that can go up to $10,000, $20,000.
Right. And these are things that you shouldn't need to hire a lawyer to resolve. And it's not even cost effective to hire a lawyer for these types of disputes. If you had to take that dispute worth $10,000 into the court where the lawyers play, then you're going to spend most of that $10,000, if not all of it, just on paying for the lawyer.
Sure.
So nobody wins.
Okay. And you're on an equal footing when you go into a small claims court because you can present your case.
That's right.
You don't have to have anybody to help you. But
you don't have to have a lawyer. In most small claims courts, you can bring a lawyer, but really, what we would recommend is if you have a small claims case, it might make sense to go see if you can hire a lawyer for just an hour of their time to talk with them about your case and say, look, here's what's going on in my case. Here's the evidence I have. I have these bills that were submitted, or I have these receipts. I was told this, I sent a letter to somebody and they told me they would pay me. Whatever evidence you have, you could discuss that with your lawyer, discuss your case for an hour, pay them an hourly rate. So you could pay the lawyer $200 flat rate to sit and talk to them for an hour and come out with some information about how to present your case.
You know what? I got to interrupt you because I forgot to take the break. I'm so interested in this subject, Tom, but we just need to let people know that they're listening to Off Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Tom Gordon. He is the Executive Director of Consumers for a Responsive Legal System, and their website is responsivelaw.org. They've got wonderful forms, much information and help for consumers in dealing with a lot of legal issues, how you can help yourself. I think, do you have anything in there? For example, I know that one of the things that you advocate is a contract with a lawyer, that you should have a contract. And it should be in writing. You won't just want a contract with a home builder. You want a contract with your lawyer.
That's exactly right, Cheryl. If you went to a lawyer to ask them what you should do, if you're having work done on your home, for example, they would say, well, make sure you get your contract with your contractor in writing. Well, the same is true for a lawyer. Anytime you have an agreement with anybody, any service provider, you should get it in writing. And a lawyer is no exception. Make sure you get in writing what the lawyer charges for, what time they'll charge for. Will they charge you for time on the phone and updating you on your case? What's their hourly rate? Who will be working for them and what are their hourly rates if they have associates or partners working on the case with them? What do they charge for time in court if that's going to be needed? And what is it that they're going to do in your case? Is mm-hmm. it you may have a lot of legal issues facing you as an individual, and the lawyer's not going to deal with every single legal issue you have. The lawyer is going to deal with a specific set of them. And so you want to make it clear what the lawyer is going to do for you and what the lawyer is not going to do for you. That way, if you have a dispute with your lawyer, you've got a contract to refer to. Also, though, putting that in writing makes it easier for you and the lawyer to be on the same page from the start of your relationship.
Right, you know exactly what's expected of you, and the lawyer knows exactly what's expected of them.
That's right.
Do lawyers resist doing a contract?
They shouldn't. There may be some who do, and if a lawyer doesn't want to put this in writing, that's a sign that you should get a different lawyer.
Yeah, maybe you need to get somebody else to work with. I would agree with that. Now, there are lots of things that we can do to help ourselves, like doing a living will,
right?
For example. What are some of the simpler legal documents? Can people actually file for divorce themselves if it's an uncontested divorce? I mean, mm-hmm. can you do that?
You can. There are forms out there that can help you with an uncontested divorce, and you can fill out forms and do that for forms that are available for a fairly low price, in some places even available for free, depending on the mm-hmm. Depending on the state and the court system. The other thing you can do is you can fill out those forms, and again, you may be able to find a lawyer who can walk you through them. And you know, not pay them to represent you in the divorce, but maybe able to look over your forms for an hourly rate that would take a lot less time than having them go into court and represent you.
Now, you have something on your website called the Citizens Bill of Rights. Tell us about that.
Right. Our Client's Bill of Rights is it's a list of 10 rights that you should either do have or should insist upon when you're working with a lawyer. So things like, as we mentioned before, getting your billing and your information and your agreement with your lawyer in writing. Things like knowing that you're in charge of the case. You make the decisions about not about the particular tactics, but you make decisions about strategy. So do you want to sue somebody or not? Do you want to settle your case or not? These are decisions that are yours to make, not the lawyer's. And then there's other things that, like I said, like getting things in writing,
right.
That are important, that are not necessarily guaranteed to you by law, but that you should insist upon when working with your lawyer.
These are protections for consumers.
Right. These are protections. Either, like I said, there's 6 of them that are in there that are guaranteed by law in most states. Another 4 that we've added on that we think you should insist upon and that any reasonable lawyer would agree to.
And again, the website is responsivelaw.org. And it is a good-looking website.
Thank you,
Tom. I think you need to be commended for the work you all have done on it. Okay, let's talk about finding a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Now, suppose you don't like the lawyer you have and you think that they have committed malpractice. Mm-hmm. Can you find a lawyer to sue them?
You are allowed to. It's tough to find. There are lawyers out there who engage in malpractice, unfortunately, and there are some lawyers out there who are malpractice lawyers who will help you resolve a dispute with a lawyer that may have committed malpractice against you. They are tough to find, though, And what you should do, though, also is keep in mind that suing a lawyer for malpractice can be a very, very difficult uphill battle. The standards for malpractice are very difficult to meet, so that to prove that your lawyer committed malpractice may be a lot more difficult than you would expect.
Well, what if you have a lawyer who's you're dealing with them and they've gotten a settlement for you, and they suddenly decide they want more of that settlement than what you felt that they were going to be getting? Mm-hmm. Does that happen?
That can happen. Like in any profession, some people are unfortunately unethical and dishonest. That's, of course, one of the reasons why you should have your contract with your lawyer in writing, so that it's clear.
So you know
if the lawyer, if it's a contingency fee case where the lawyer gets a percentage, you know what that percentage is and what the lawyer's entitled to and what you're entitled to. But there are programs out there, if you have a dispute about that, where there are arbitration programs through state bar associations mm-hmm. that you can go to, and they will try to mediate that dispute between you and your lawyer. So hopefully this doesn't come to a situation where you sue a lawyer. But if you have to, there are resources out there if you need to do that.
Okay. And again, the website for Tom and his organization is responsivelaw.org. And there's some great information there. And, you know, go check it out, because I'm always learning something when I go to your website, Tom. I think it does a good job of helping consumers to get through the maze of the legal system sometimes. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Tom Gordon. He is the executive director of Consumers for a Responsive Legal System. I like that title.
Well, that says
a lot to me. All right. We've talked about finding a lawyer, suing a lawyer. You mentioned going to the Bar Association. Now, I've had consumers say, well, that's a futile effort. Is it?
It depends. This is one of those things that varies a lot from state to state. But most states have a fairly responsive system where they have, it's often called the Office of Bar Counsel or something to that effect, where these are the lawyers who work for the bar or for the court system and are in charge of enforcing that lawyers obey the ethical rules that they're bound by. So these are really, you know, really good people concerned about lawyers' reputation and concerned about consumers getting the justice they deserve in disputes. So they're really in charge of policing the profession. Now, the problem is a lot of these offices are overburdened. There are more problems than they can possibly handle. And so there are large backlogs of cases and just not enough resources to investigate all the potential cases mm-hmm. of lawyer misconduct.
Oh, well, that is unfortunate. But you should file a complaint.
Absolutely. Even if your complaint isn't successful, having a pattern of complaints, like in a lot of professions, it's a few bad apples that are spoiling mm-hmm. the reputation of the whole profession. And there's often a few bad lawyers, bad apples who are causing a lot of problems by behaving unethically. And if a lot of people complain, the more people that complain about them, the more likely it is that that lawyer will be disciplined for their misconduct.
Okay. So the real thing is you should make sure you have a contract.
Right.
Talk to your lawyer mm-hmm. and ask questions. You have a right to do that, right?
Right. And you should. And most lawyers will appreciate that. They want to know that you're going to be involved in your case. They want to know that you're aware of what's going on in your case. Then by seeing that, they'll know that you'll be helping them do the work on your case better.
You know, I think, Tom, sometimes it's like talking to your doctor. People are intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't be.
No. And the more you talk, the better information you'll be able to give, and the better information and the more help you'll be able to get.
In both cases.
Your doctor
or your lawyer.
Right.
That's absolutely right. Now, for consumers who have legal issues, and there are a number of things that they can do. I mean, trying mm-hmm. to settle it, they can come to call for action. It's mm-hmm. We're not lawyers. We don't take legal cases, but we might be a step in the direction of trying to get something resolved. So there are mediation services set up in states, but do you have to go through those through some system, or how would you get to them?
It depends. A lot of them are run through the court, so you can go to a state court's website mm-hmm. and find the mediation, what mediation might be available in that state. And it depends. Some of it's going to be paid, some of it's going to be free, but that all varies from state to state. But the best thing to do is to look at your state court system's website to find out what resources they might have available.
Well, and two, I know... that oftentimes you can find information just by talking to the clerk of the court.
Absolutely. Clerks are there to be helpful.
Especially small claims court.
Mm-hmm. Right. The clerks in the court are there, especially in the small claims court, are there to be helpful and to assist people. They can't represent you in your case. They can't give you legal advice, but they can give you a lot of information about where you can find resources.
And how it works, how the system
how the court works.
Works,
right? Yeah. So if you have questions, if you say, hey, I've got a form to fill out, or, you know, I've got to file a case, which form do I fill out? They can tell you which form so you don't get sent in the wrong direction down the rabbit hole.
Now, what do you see your organization working on in the near future? Where are you spending your energies?
We're spending putting a lot of energy into expanding the types of help that people can get. So working on things like the LLLTs in Washington and California, trying to expand access to small claims court, and also trying to get consumers more information about the resources available to them. There's a lot of new interesting things out there, like online legal service providers, some of which are lawyers, some of which are not. A lot of new innovations in the delivery of legal services. And we want to make sure that these new service providers are able to exist and to thrive rather than be held back because lawyers are afraid of change and new means of delivering legal services.
And you're also trying to help consumers to understand the system.
Absolutely.
So that they can use it, right? Exactly.
Right. These new services aren't going to do anybody any good if people don't know they're there and people don't know how to use them.
And you have a directory of those things on your website.
We do. If you go to our website and you go to the resources section, we've got a directory of different legal service providers, whether it's people who provide forms online or off. Whether it's lawyers, people you can find who will help you with your legal problem, either for a contingency fee or for a flat fee, hourly rate, and also links to general resources about the legal system.
And all of that helps us to get a little bit closer to answers without perhaps having to consult a lawyer, which is, I know part of your goal is we're not cutting out lawyers, you just want to make certain that consumers can get the help they need.
Absolutely. We don't need to cut out lawyers. In fact, a lot of these people who aren't lawyers, we mentioned the LLLTs, they'll see something that they know is something that's beyond their training.
Sure.
And they'll pass it on up and they'll say, you need to see a lawyer about this. This is more complicated than I can handle it with my training. Again, that's very similar to what a physician's assistant would do. If they take a diagnose you and see that there's something they don't understand. Mm-hmm. They know enough to know you need to see a doctor.
A doctor. Sure, sure. Now, do you anticipate that people who are offering these services, that they're going to be able to advertise their services? How are people going to know about them?
Hopefully they'll be advertising, of course. One of the things we're hoping to do also with some of these services is to allow outside investment in them. What happens in law, there's a series of ethical rules that basically prevent lawyers from getting outside investment from non-lawyers. So if you want,
what do you mean? You mean to make your business go?
To make your business go. So if you have something innovative,
so if
you want to do
it's not like
business,
running a store or a company where you can get money from outside. That's what you're saying. Okay.
Right. So you have to either put up money yourself or borrow it individually or as a business, but you can't have outside capital funders come in and fund your legal business. This is why law firms are really relatively small in the U.S. They don't get to do those large innovative things. So you have giant, you know, chains of stores that provide services in innovative ways. You have you can have large businesses like Amazon.com that's revolutionized the way that people get goods. But we don't have the same for law, in large part because lawyers can't bring in outside investment. And so we'd like to see outside investment allowed so that lawyers can create these innovative models on their own. And that would, again, like Amazon, would make things more accessible to people, would give them, we don't know what the innovation would be right now, but there would be some innovations that somebody would come up with, some brilliant business person who's not allowed to work with this these lawyers because they're not allowed to invest. But if they were allowed to share in the profits, they'd create an innovative system to get legal services.
Right now, the creation of those is stifled because of the lack of resources.
Absolutely.
What you're saying.
Now, in the UK, you're seeing some of these systems begin to evolve because they've allowed outside investment. And so you're seeing a wider range of different services reaching people where lawyers are showing up in malls and in store chains nationwide.
Right. Well, Tom, the time has flown by. Can't believe it. Thank you so much for being here. I think it's been very informative. And again, the website is responsivelaw.org, and you can get a ton of information there on all kinds of forms, help, finding lawyers, et cetera, et cetera. And you've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on 1500 AM Federal News Radio. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest has been Tom Gordon, who is the Executive Director of Consumers for a Responsive Legal System. I'm Shirley Rooker, and thank you for joining us.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.